The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library. The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. We are here because of our beautiful patrons who donate a little each month. We humbly ask you to please consider joining our Patreon, because what you choose to support will continue. What you do not, won't. And yes, there are even free memberships. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. That's where all the real magic happens. Find our weird presence on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And even our weirder merch at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary. Thank you. Mr. Darling, tonight's reading is on the subject of eccentrics. Do you think we're eccentric? Or at least abnormal?
Madam, I come from a humdrum background of typical shape-shifting wolf creatures who haunt and hunt in enchanted forests, preferably in the company of powerful witches such as yourself. I cannot think of anything more normal.
Right. And my family's fabled storybook witches that terrorize real humans is as old as time. Perhaps we should try new, darker, daring things sometime.
Maybe. Shall I toss a few more femurs on the fire to brighten the room?
Oh, yes. Thank you, darling.
Good evening, my dear guests. If you could just please wait just a moment with me outside of the reading room. Mr. Darling is just going to tidy up the fireplaces a little. If you'll just wait. If you could place the larger sticks the wolf pups have dragged in near the front of the fire. Mr. Darling, please?
Certainly, madam. Yeah.
Yes. The ones at the back are spent by now. Good. Thank you.
My pleasure, madam.
Now?
Yes. Now is fine,
yes.
Madam.
Yes, now. Now you may enter safely. There we go.
Je vois pas, madame.
Yes, yes, indeed, Mr. Southwell. The reading room does smell especially good this evening, doesn't it? like a Sunday roast, or something. We hardly ever have to gather any firewood or kindling, since Romulus and Remus are always dragging huge branches and even logs home to the library. They seem to like the ones most popular for smoking various meats. That must be the reason for the captivating aroma. It just has to be. Welcome to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. I am your wholesome host, Miranda Merrick. The library, as just noted, often smells of delicious smoke-infused, fleshy, foodly goodies. I do apologize nearly sincerely to any strict vegetarians who may be here, as most of those who reside here in the library are
voracious carnivores.
Excuse me. It's our honest nature, and as you know, Mother Nature is a
beast.
Excuse me. I would apologize on her behalf, but it simply would do no good and possibly prompt her to anger. Let us agree to live and let
not live,
shall we? It's also our nature to respect and even emulate Mother Nature as an entity. Some might say this makes us eccentric. Some might say a lot of things
about us.
Coincidentally, tonight's reading happens to be on the beloved nature of people who are of a similar nature to ours. And presumably, given that you are here in the first place, undoubtedly, some of you may be as well. Tonight, we will explore the astounding lives, habits, and possessions of those among us known as eccentrics. One point of possible contention surrounding the definition of eccentricity is the debate or proclamation that only wealthy people can be eccentric, and that middle class and people who get by on substantially less in life are just maladjusted. This is pure poppycock, my lovelies, and anyone who boldly colors outside the lines of the typical and mundane, especially going outside of that which is boringly socially sanitized, is eccentric. And I'll hear nothing else to the contrary. And I should like to add with great pride and enthusiasm that we, well, any people who are by any definition eccentric, are often found to be the spice of life, the color to the canvas of existence, and the source of vivification to the dullness of everyday living. They bring the flavor. Now, it may be hypothesized that people who become eccentric in their ways, knowingly or not, are, at their core, absurdists. An absurdist is one who generally feels that the very nature of existence makes no sense, and that there are no real truths to be found that actually explain what we perceive to be reality, or the point of being here. Therefore, they don't feel obligated to make sense either. These people, mostly without harming anyone or anything, are compelled to live, speak, dress, create, build, and to collect the strangest things, and to behave in an odd manner, either in private or to portray or display themselves, their actions, or their collections of belongings that are strange, unusual, or absurd to others, who sadly may never understand what it means to be eccentric. Oh my word, I am excited to tell you about these extraordinary people. Well, it has been difficult to choose, but we must begin with someone, so I've chosen a man after my own heart to get us started. What he did isn't really dark or mysterious, so much as it was deceptive fun. This man neither purchased nor built a peculiar stately home, nor did he possess or collect anything that was strange or unsettling. What he did do, however, was to try to live, or at least to sample, as many different lives, personas, lifestyles, and occupations as he could. I do like his philosophy. Stanley Wayman proclaimed that one man's single life is a boring thing. I have lived many lives. I'm never bored. Delightful. Stanley Wayman's eccentricity was that he liked to be, or perhaps I should say, he dared to be, other people. And although he was arrested and served time for being a fraud and impersonating different positions and professions for which he had no credentials, he couldn't ever actually be charged with impersonating another person, because what he did was to invent a person and then pretend to be them. And there's a strikingly weird thing about his compulsion to do this. He never pulled his identity pranks strictly for money, although money did come into play in some of his hijinks. Stanley Wayman was pretending to be other people who generally possessed variations of his own name. How clever. For the sheer adventure of it, just to see how far along in the game he could get and what sort of elaborate escapades he could take part in. Stanley never obscured or disguised his features, but he was fond of dazzling uniforms. Born into a working-class family in 1890 in Brooklyn, New York, Stanley showed a great deal of promise and interest in one day becoming a doctor. But his family's meager income could not provide the lofty tuition for him to do so. Undaunted by this minor inconvenience, doctor is just one of the many professions that would end up on Stanley's various resumes. Beginning as Stanley Weinberg, his first foray into becoming someone else didn't go off quite so well. But we must all learn from our early mistakes, right? In this case, Stanley claimed to be a U.S. consul representative, an appointed diplomatic agent to Port-au-Prince in Morocco. He dressed in the dignified attire of the position and conned his way into briefly living the lifestyle, mainly indulging in expensive nights on the town and dining in some of New York City's finest restaurants. The jig on this gig was up when the press became curious about the highly positioned diplomat. They investigated his credentials, only to find that not only was there no U.S. consul named Stanley Weinberg, there wasn't any such position as a diplomatic agent for Port-au-Prince either, because Port-au-Prince didn't exist. Stanley had invented the person, the dignified post, and the far-off exotic location. In a time when there were no photo IDs and telephones were just coming into play, it was easy to simply dress up as someone you aspired to be. The trick was to have the wherewithal to carry it off, and Stanley Wayman successfully, at least for short periods of time, portrayed himself to very believably be various military officials, army and naval officers, political figures, and several different kinds of doctors, including psychiatrists. He acted as a lawyer a few times. He claimed to be the consul for the country of Romania, and also the Secretary of State. He even showed up as a United Nations dignitary with an expertise in Asian and Balkan relations. And he always appeared in the polished attire or uniform of the professional that he claimed to be, if needed, with brass buttons, officer stripes, and a badged hat. Stanley believed he was who he said he was, and many other people believed him too. His crowning caper was accomplished in 1921, when he came to the aid of a foreign princess, Princess Fatima Sultana of Afghanistan, who desperately wanted to be received as a guest of the White House and to meet President Warren G. Harding, who had been, for political reasons, ignoring her request for a reception. Lucky for her, State Department Naval Liaison Officer Rodney Sterling Wyman contacted the princess and stated that he could arrange for her to be received in the company of the president, if she could send along a considerable sum of money that he could use to unlock the right doors and to get him in touch with just the right people to make it happen for her. And my guess, she sent the money. $10,000. And stealthy Stanley did not abscond with the money or take advantage of her in any way. Instead, unbelievably, he used the money to do just what he proclaimed that he would. He began contacting the right people in the State Department and took them out for friendly dinners and made arrangements for the princess to visit. Stanley Wyman saw to it that she and her sons were brought to the United States by way of royal transport on an ocean liner, and even put them up in luxury accommodations. Princess Fatima met with the Secretary of State, and soon after that, she realized her dream of meeting President Harding in the White House. And Naval Liaison Officer Wyman met with a judge and was sentenced to 2 years in prison for making it all happen. It is said that Stanley Wayman often stated that he had no regrets for attempting to live so many lives. And personally, I agree with him. tonight's sponsor, In the Midnight Library, in case you're looking for a different version of yourself or someone else, is Evelyn's Everything Store. Perhaps we've finally inspired you to branch out into something more. They have everything to attire you at Evelyn's Everything Store. Adorn yourself with scarves and coins. Get wine that makes you tipsy. Twirl with delight in what you're doing. You're a newfangled classic gypsy. Start a collection to shock your mom. Get spiders and eels all squirmy. Learn to preserve them and how to embalm. Your new gig is taxidermy. Dress like a gent from centuries past. Get your top hat, tails, and cane. Be that dandy enthusiast. Drive the boring people insane. Don't be a humdrum man of the cloth. When there's a villainous dark to explore, transform yourself to a gorgeous goth at Evelyn's Everything Store. Evelyn has everything you need to begin being eccentric today. From do-it-yourself trepanning kits to live invisible pets. Buyer beware, Evelyn is not responsible for your use of any purchased product, your appearance, behavior, psychosis, social rejection, arrest, conviction, or imprisonment, or making your mommy cry. Find Evelyn's Everything Store, located conveniently right next to the barbershop on Fleet Street in the Village. To open the following tale, I'd just like to state the obvious fact that most people only ever take one ride in a hearse, their last ride. And they don't even get to enjoy the scenery or to see the eyes of the faces of those they pass by. But not this lady. This fascinating, undoubtedly eccentric woman's story that I am delighted to tell you about will sadly be very brief, but I found her example to be both outlandish and irresistible. It frustrates me no end, my lovelies, that we don't even have this wantonly wild woman's name. We do, however, have the attention-grabbing post made about her in an 1871 Quebec newspaper, where her moving display of unbelievable behavior astounded everyone who witnessed what she did. I'll just call her Miss Jane Doe. And the blurb about her was even accompanied by a rather detailed illustration that can still be viewed today. The short caption beneath the pen and ink drawing read, "A Quebec woman creates a sensation, riding through St. John Street in a hearse, reclining on the coffin bed and smoking a pipe." This divinely subversive soul was, in my opinion, ahead of her time. She was apparently an independent thinker, a true character, and most certainly fearless. She also apparently had enough money to hire the grand and stately horse-drawn carriage and the driver in full mourning attire to haul her lounging self around through the town, while she flippantly gazed out the huge oval-shaped window of the shiny black hearse. The fine drawing shows her stretched out, resting comfortably on her left side, with her head propped up by her hand, just gazing out at the people of the town as she rolled by. Her hair is neat, and she's wearing a long Victorian gown with puffy sleeves. Her unfazed face bears a glib expression as the black pipe protruding from her lips sends up silent puffs of lazy smoke. One of the best things about this eccentric scene is the comical depiction of the shocking commotion she caused by doing this. Many astounded faces can be seen reacting to her unusual presence. I'll tell you, my dear guests, choosing from the nearly endless candidates of those living lives of extreme eccentricity was no easy thing. They range from the absurd to verging on being cruel at times. But I have for you now the tale of two Henrys, one bent on pomp and pageantry, the other a brawling drunkard, who may have taken his secret, dangerous, and infamous identity to his grave. First, the fun one. Henry Cyril Paget was born with the lofty title of the 5th Marquess of Anglesey in 1875. And to begin with, it was rumored that the 4th Marquess was not his actual father, because his mother was said to have been in the company of a well-known French stage actor, which I think you'll begin to see how this could very likely be the case. Excuse me. Henry attended Eton College, married his cousin, which was a great relief to his family, as they thought he might not marry. And he was even drawn into a prestigious appointment with the Royal Welsh Military, which did not suit young Henry in any way. In 1898, the 4th Marquess, Henry's recognized father, died, leaving Henry 30,000 acres that sprawled across both Wales and England, and the yearly income of £10,000, or the equivalent today of $15 million per annum. Shortly thereafter, Henry and, I assume, his cousin wife began hosting lavish gatherings and parties at Anglesey Castle, which actually looks like a stately mansion. Henry wanted to offer his guests more than just a fancy pheasant dinner and some 100-year-old wine. Henry wanted to put on an appearance. His guests arrived to find him regally ragged out in furs and jewels. He hired costumers to create futuristic and fantasy garments for him, with crowns, bejeweled scepters, and flowing capes for him to stride around in. He renamed Anglesey Castle to Plas Newydd, meaning the new place, and he proved this by having the castle's chapel turned into a glamorous theater with a lighted stage and 150 velvet theater chairs for his guests. Here, Henry basically ran his own theater production house, featuring musicals, pantomimes, and plays, and all for free. It was said that Henry couldn't conceive of costume jewelry, so every gem he owned that gleamed, on stage or not, was real. Henry was known as the Dancing Marquess because of his outlandish costumes he performed and presented himself in. He was the Elton John times 10 of his time. And I could go on and on about him, but briefly, Henry took his theater team on the road and paid for everything. Sometimes twice, when things were often stolen from him. He bought top-of-the-line automobiles and even had one altered so that the offensive exhaust fumes were converted into puffing out a rose-scented perfume instead. He purchased a herd of expensive purebred poodles, traveled extensively, pouring money on possessions, vacation homes, and hired help. And he acquired lots of debt, as he managed to spend more than his profuse income could cover. His wife, whom he did enjoy heaping his riches upon with everything and more that she might have ever wanted, divorced him, citing, let's say, an absence of affection from Henry as her reason. In 1904, his entire empire imploded, triggering the mass sale referred to as the Great Anglesey Sale, and everything went. His jewelry alone was said to fetch over £32,000. Or roughly $47 million in modern dollars. This colorful character sadly died of tuberculosis 1 year later, at the age of 29. I'm not embarrassed to implore you, my guests, to please search Henry Cyril Paget, CYRILPAGET. To see the amazing images of this fascinating man. Now, Henry number two was a horse of a different color. No, he was very different indeed. A creep of a different flavor. I'm afraid Henry de la Pore Beresford, the third Marquess of Waterford, was an eccentric whose hijinks fall under the crueler side of human nature. Possibly more cruel in their originality in that they coined both a phrase and a personality that I'm willing to bet you are very familiar with. In fact, although this second Henry does turn up in a long list of eccentrics, I am much more inclined to just label him as a hellion, and not in the good way at all. Briefly, Henry was a high-born aristocrat from his start in 1811. From all accounts, he developed a daring personality and a love for liquor very early on in his life. He quickly became known as the Mad Marquess of Waterford and seemed to pursue public drinking and rabble-rousing as his life's work, and became well known for his many antics, of which I'm going to give you the condensed versions of here. Henry once took up residence in the town's Haymarket, bringing with him countless bottles of gin. Out of boredom, he then gave the expensive bottles of strong hooch away to as many people who would take it. The drinkers began to fight, a thundering brawl broke out in the marketplace, no doubt instigated by Henry, because Henry just wanted to have some excitement. When he was arrested for drunkenly riding his horse at a full gallop through a crowd of people at a town gathering, the Marquess insisted his horse should be interviewed by the police because only the horse knew how fast it was going, and he himself was too drunk to even recall the supposed event. He once penned a sincere letter of proposal to the owner of the railway company, offering the man £10,000 to stage the derailment and crash of a many-carred train, just so he could watch the wreckage take place. The offer was declined, by the way. Did I mention that Henry attended Oxford University? Well, he was expelled from there around 1837 for, quote, conduct unbecoming a gentleman. And he proved this by showing up with a drunken group of his friends at a toll gate one night. Henry and his chums not only refused to pay the toll, they also beat up the toll keeper. Then they stole buckets and buckets of red paint that were stored by a nearby bridge that was being painted, and held down the toll keeper so Henry could paint him red. They also went on a rampage throughout the town and painted a policeman, doors, windows, signs, and the post office, and several more ensuing police officers red. The Marquess was made to pay for all of the damages. And those of you who may, from time to time, enjoy your stay at the Broom and Fang a little too robustly, might hear the familiar phrase gifted to us by Henry, that you were out painting the town red. The second thing is something that Henry was suspected of, and is quite darker. Henry, the Marquess of Waterford, in spite of his falling down drunkenness, was known to be a very fit man, lithe and athletic, strong even, and an accomplished horseman. He rode competitively and always had the very best horses, and was known for always displaying his Waterford family crest emblazoned on his chest and shield with a giant W. He was quite the showman. He was also known to carry a grudge and even to have a violent side. His escapades abroad landed him in the hospital when he was hit in the head by a constable, wielding a Morning Star weapon, when Henry was ardently harassing a woman. He had run-in after run-in with the various members of law enforcement. All during his early maturing years, a mysterious and dangerous figure was terrorizing London. A shadowy man with a slick outfit, who attacked lone police officers, accosted women, and knocked on random doors after dark, only to lash out or thrust flames into the face of the woman or even a child that answered the door. When pursued, this horrid man was said to run at great speed and to spring with ease over any hedge or fence, or even to leap up onto a rooftop and easily escape. This vicious attacker became known as Spring-Heeled Jack. One young boy who slammed the door in the face of the vile villain swore that he saw the letter W emblazoned on his black clothing. Stefan, you've scared the life out of all of us.
Well, I certainly apologize to you and everyone, Ms. Merrick. An odd stranger has been seen around the property this evening, and I thought I'd offer to walk everyone who would like me to back to the main road.
How kind. If any of you would like Stefan's company, please raise your hand and say yes or aye. Yes.
Aye.
Yes!
Yes!
Oh my. You're going to be very busy, Mr. Strangeways.
It'll be my pleasure, ma'am. Won't you please follow me, folks?
Well, since Stefan is tending to the guests, what do you say to an early cup of tea, darling?
Stefan cannot guard them all, madam. And I fancy a snack. Maybe tonight is Mr. Gristle's night. Besides, I noticed his breathing was annoying the ladies.
My stars. You know, you are the most considerate homicidal wolf creature.
I do try, madam. Back in a flash. Extra cream and sugar, please.
Oh, don't forget to wipe your claws, please.
Will do.
The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. We are here because of our beautiful patrons who donate a little each month. We humbly ask you to please consider joining our Patreon, because what you choose to support will continue. What you do not, won't. And yes, there are even free memberships. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. That's where all the real magic happens. Find our weird presence on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And even our weirder merch at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary. Thank you.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.